You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! My guest is Leroy Barber. Leroy is the chaplain of Kilns College, director of the Voices Project, and author of Red, Brown, Yellow, Black, White, and Everyday Missions. He's on the boards of several organizations, including Missio Alliance and the Christian Community Development Association. He and his family live in Portland, Oregon. Leroy, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good to be back. Thanks for having me again.
I've never talked about football on this show for somehow after over 150 episodes, no football talk. I'm originally from West Texas, like 45 minutes from Midland, Odessa, where the book Friday Night Lights was written about.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, I was born in football culture, and unfortunately I played tennis in high school, so reap none of the benefits of it. but I totally get it. Where did you grow up, Leroy?
I grew up in Philadelphia.
Okay, that's what I thought. How in the world did you become a Cowboys fan?
You know, that's always a leading question for a lot of things I do.
I can imagine.
Oh, man. And like I tell everybody, I started watching them when I was a kid in the 70s and fell in love and been loyal ever since. And it's a hard life growing up as a Cowboys fan in Philly.
I can imagine that. So that 70s era Cowboys team is like a really famous team.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I could still see, you know, a lot of that in my mind, you know, Roger Staubach and Preston Pearson and Drew Pearson and Robert Newhouse and Hollywood Henderson and Ed Too Tall Jones. And oh yeah, man, just, Golden Richards. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a team from like, what, 40 years ago now?
I
could still name. So. So that's what I fell in love with, man. So, you know, and then, you know, then it went from there. That was the start. And then it went from there to, you know, the Tony Dorsett era and, you know, all of that. And then the 90s, you know, with Troy Aikman and Irvin and Emmett. And so, yeah, you know, I've been following for a long time, man. So.
Yeah, I was in middle school when the Cowboys got hot in the 90s. And that was, I mean, that's a good age to be.
Oh, yeah. And that came off of, you know, some bad times, man. I've suffered in the 80s, man. the worst was the 1-15 season. Oh, that was just horrible. And, you know, being from Philly and your Cowboys go 1-15, oh man, it's hard to live down, bro. Hard to live down. That was kind of what was happening then.
I mean, recent memory's been pretty dry for the Cowboys. Last season was a bright spot, but kind of before that, it's been pretty dry.
Now we're in a dry spot again for, oh man. Well, a dry spot, but, you know, kind of just enough to tease you to think they're going to be good for, you know, for a while. And then Tony Romo is just, you know, this figure that you just, people love or hate him, you know. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting last couple decades with the Cowboys.
So football means a lot to you. I mean, I'm kind of a fair weather friend. Like I like watching it when it's on. It's kind of interesting. It's fun to watch. But it's more serious for you. Like you're a diehard fan.
Yeah. I always, you know, I wear a wristband of my team. I have a man cave with all kinds of paraphernalia in it. And you know, I love the game. I always tell folks, you know, even when the Cowboys aren't in it, like I love football more than I love the Cowboys, which is hard to believe, but like I really do. So, yeah, watch it. In the fall, man, I get really excited in the fall, this time of year, and training camps and all of the college talk, all of the high school talk. Yeah, it's a big part of my life. So probably more than it should be.
So I think most people know at this point who Colin Kaepernick is. I knew of him before he sat out the Pledge of Allegiance. Because he brought the 49ers to two Super Bowls. So I kind of remember that.
Right.
So in recent years, he's moved to a backup position, mm-hmm. and which happens usually. It's very hard for someone to keep a starting position in quarterback for an extended period of time. They've got to be super, super good.
Right.
Was it last season or the season before when he started to, was he taking a knee originally during the Pledge of Allegiance?
It started last season, and, you know, he decided to take a knee, and I believe that start was in a preseason game.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, he took that knee, and then he decided to keep going, and he did it for the entire season. And, you know, it other players joined him, other from other teams, other sports, high school teams, soccer teams, all around the world. They were like, so it was a good place of solidarity because of why he was taking a knee, you know? And those reasons being, look, there's injustice, you know, black communities of color are struggling in this country, and we need to broaden the conversation. We need to have deeper conversations. We need to raise awareness around this. And so his taking a knee did that. It brought that conversation back up, you know, and or not back up, but kept it and fueled it. So I think it did what he intended it to do. And lo and behold, he gets punished for that, you know. So
I was looking before at his Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't know much about him personally at all. He himself, he's biracial and was adopted by a white couple, mm-hmm. who are his parents. And I thought that's so interesting. And I think that he could, I mean, he has to live his day to day and has had to live it as a person of color. And yet I think having white parents growing up in a white household, he could easily just kind of turn his back to a lot of the oppression, a lot of the racism in the world, but, you know, chose, and also he's fairly wealthy playing in the NFL, but
that's the thing, right? That's the thing about what makes what he's doing, I think, so special, right? Like, because if you look at Kaepernick, you know, people go, hey, American success story, right? Like, kid gets adopted by a family, white family, right? And goes to school and gets to college, becomes an NFL player, right? Is extremely wealthy, not, you know, like making millions and millions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, making millions and millions of dollars playing football, right? Like the American sport, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like football is second to no other sport in this country, right? It is our gladiator sport. And, right, he's playing quarterback, right? Like quarterback is the position in football. It's the one that gets paid, right? You know?
Yep.
And he goes to the Super Bowl, right?
Yep, yep.
This plays in the Super Bowl. Like, why in the world would this guy, like, turn his back on America is what people think, right? He's the American story. And what I believe, you know, what I see from him is, look, other people are struggling and suffering. And just because my story is great, everybody's story isn't. And he feels a responsibility to speak for others from that place. right?
Yeah.
That's the power of Kaepernick. That's the power of what he did, right? Because you should be grateful, right? And thankful for who you are and where you are and what happened to you and all of these kinds of things. Instead, you're causing all this trouble, right? Yeah. Like, that's kind of where people, you know, get rubbed for, you know, around Kaepernick, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and there's, and I think to kind of, to go along with what you're saying, there's no, nothing about this benefits him, right? Like, there's nothing, there's no way to see this as self-serving for him.
No. Self-serving what? He's wealthy, right?
Right.
It's American story. So, yeah, like, there's nothing self-serving about it. And which is what I love, again, about the story. And I loved about the story as he was doing it last year. And he brought up a lot of attention and had a lot of conversations. He put his, you know, he put his money where his mouth was. He's giving to things and showing up for high school football games and giving talks and helping people get to job interviews. And I mean, he didn't just take a knee and that was it, right? He was also active and is active and giving into these places as well, like sharing of his wealth.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing about this is that he is a player and a young man who also hasn't been in trouble, right?
Mm, yeah.
Right? Because if there was a place for people to say, well, he did this or he did that or he did this, then that would be the out, right, for folks.
Yep.
But you don't even have that. This dude has his character is intact, right? And so there's no way to get to him on that. So the only way that these folks get to him is to get him off of the football field, right? Like, do not give this man a contract to continue to play football. And I think that's so wrong. I think the fact that he is getting ostracized for standing up as a person of color and like his right to free speech, exercising that, right? Like, people are saying he's anti-American. That makes no sense. He's peacefully protesting, taking a knee, right? Yeah. How much more peaceful can you be, and how much more American can you be? I don't see it.
I want to get to the NFL, you know, effectively kicking him out, but also want to talk about how the negative reaction to him doing that has echoes of racism that are really, really old. This history of like, we just want you to entertain us. We're not here to hear you talk about stuff.
Yeah. So I think you're right, man. I think I don't believe he's doing anything anti-American. I think he's standing up as an American and honoring the rights that people died for, right? Anytime somebody protests peacefully as an American, they are honoring people that died for that. That's my belief. Hmm. The other thing is, yes, I think the racial implications of, like, you can't speak out as a person of color for people of color, right? Because I even think it goes deeper than him just speaking out. I think what he's speaking out about also matters.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Because if he was speaking out about something that was for white folks or dominant culture, that would be okay.
Yep.
Right? That would get applauded. But because he's speaking out and saying people of color aren't being treated well, that Latino and African American and Native and Asian, right? Like, these folks aren't getting treated well, and we need to have further, deeper conversations about this stuff, because that's what he's speaking out against. Then he's getting even further, ostracized. You know,
yeah.
I think it's a combination of both. We're diving into kind of the deeper, places in kind of the American mindset of individualism, right? You get yours, you get paid, you be quiet, and you will be fine, right? That idea, right? That this is rugged individualism, man. Take care of yourself, and if you get it, don't worry about anybody else. Like those types of ideologies that sit within who we are as Americans, right? That when somebody decides, I'm going to sacrifice for another person, I'm going to speak up for another person when I don't have to, and when I have nothing to gain from it but everything to lose, but I'm still going to speak up in that space, somehow that seems anti-American, right? And I think we wrestle with that internally as Americans, right? Like, wait, how much of myself or how much of mine do I keep and are not put in jeopardy?
Yeah.
That thing, I think, sits within us as Americans and causes us tremendous stress and pain and anxiety. Because we have done so much in this country, right, to people of color, to women, right, to poor folks, right, like all these things we have done, we have to protect ourselves some kind of way from the emotional trauma that comes from that, right? And I think that's, hello,
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I think that's where all of this stems from, or a lot of it.
So here we are, summer of 2017. All contracts have been made with teams, for players, and Colin Kaepernick did not get picked up. He was a backup quarterback, but there were a lot of other quarterbacks who were not very good who got on teams.
Right.
Right. It seems to be among people who know, who follow football that closely, that Colin Kaepernick's a lot better than some people who did get picked up by teams.
Oh, I mean, so I told you I'm a sports junkie, right? And you can call sports radio shows now, and they will say there's no way that Colin Kaepernick is worse than all of the quarterbacks who are signed right now in the NFL to play this season. No, it's just not. That's just not true. That's ludicrous, right? I heard Dan Le Batard yesterday on his show go, like, he literally called a couple of the owners cowards for not signing Kaepernick. Hmm. Because their teams and who they signed, those quarterbacks are much worse than a Colin Kaepernick. It's not even a question of sports.
What do you think the owners are afraid of? Because my guess, if I had to say, I would say they're not immoral as much as they're amoral regarding this issue.
Well, I think the owners are bottom line people.
Yes.
And I think they are afraid that this will affect their bottom line.
Right, right.
And if it's going to affect their bottom line, then they don't want anything to do with it. I think that's the driver of this. And what drives me crazy in the situation is that at least admit why you are doing what, like why this is the case. Stop telling me that this is because this is a football decision.
Right.
And that he's worse than these other quarterbacks. That's what you're trying to sell me. He's declined. He's not as good as he used to be and those kinds of things. Well, some of that might be true, but he's still not as bad as many of the quarterbacks that are signed. That's just that there's not much argument in that space.
Well, and it's not like we think that he should be a starting quarterback of a team, but there are backup positions that he's able to fill.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the Jets are starting people that are, he is just as good or better than both quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's not about that. And if we could have honest dialogue about these things, it would be much better. Hmm. Hey, this is about money. Hey, actually, also, like, is there, and ask the question, is there some, are there some racial implications? Because, like, you keep telling me that these things aren't about race, and here we have another African-American person speaking out who's being punished professionally in a league where, you know, before 15 or so years ago, there wasn't even a black head coach. There's not a black owner, right? Like, you keep telling me these things aren't about race, but man, like, all of these other factors, am I just to ignore all of this? Hmm. Right? Like, I don't know, man. It's time to stop going around the subject and have the conversations we need to have on race in this country. We just won't do it.
So you've decided you're going to do something about it.
Absolutely.
For yourself.
I am a leader. I'm a writer. I'm a speaker. I talk to a lot of people for my professional career, and I've become an activist. And if I don't say anything, I don't think I'm fulfilling my call or my profession with integrity.
I think that there might be people listening who don't understand how big of a sacrifice that is to not watch a season of the NFL. For someone like you who's a super fan, like, that's a big deal.
Shane. At Thanksgiving, my family, we all put on jerseys. That's what we wear. Like Thanksgiving, yes, it's a holiday about whatever. That is not what Thanksgiving is in my home. Thanksgiving is football. The Cowboys will play that day. We will watch three football games starting from the beginning of the day, and we go to bed after a football game goes off, right? Like Super Bowl parties, if you talk to anybody who's lived anywhere near me, know for the last at least 20 years, I've had a Super Bowl party at my house with multiple TVs, grills going, fires outside, blanket so that we can watch it like we're at a game. Like, I love this game.
That's huge.
This is not an easy thing for me. But I refuse to be silent on what's happening around race, around what's happening with the poor in our country, what's happening with women, all of these issues. We have to have conversations. It's just not working. And all it means is an admission that we have a problem.
So not only are you going to not watch, but you're going to fill that time with something else.
We're going to make an effort to, one, raise funds for veterans, as many veterans of color, minority veterans that we can. and we're going to visit veterans. I went to a baseball game a few weeks ago up in Seattle, and just walking out of the ballpark, I've come across an African-American veteran laying in the streets. Right? He has his he has American flags on him. He has a T-shirt saying, you know, saying he's a veteran, and he's laying in the streets. Right? That person served this country, right? Mm-hmm. For us to say we are free and have freedoms, and he's now laying in the streets. We have problems, man.
It seems like this issue connects with the Kaepernick issue to you.
It does. The connection point is people who stand up and or exercise and or do things to be accepted in America, right? Mm-hmm. As citizens, and then not get the full rewards of that citizenship. The Tuskegee Airmen, right? Mm-hmm. Black GIs serving in World War II, who come home and there's a GI Bill for you to buy a house and start a family, and black GIs aren't counted in on that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, these people just fought in World War II, come home, and their country literally smacks them in the face and says, no, you can't buy houses in certain places. You, like, this GI Bill is not fully for you. Again, we have a problem that we need to talk about.
So what's this have to do with Jesus?
Man, if I have been a Christian most of my life since I was 9 years old. I study the Bible. I love the Bible. I love the church. I believe I've worked missions and have had a long career in missions and all of those kinds of things. And after 52 years in this world, and 30 of it being spent working in that space, I've come to, if Jesus is not present in these kinds of conversations and situations, and if he doesn't care about this kind of injustice, then Christianity is a farce. Now, obviously, I believe that he strongly speaks to these things. But if you're a Christian and you can live with these kinds of things, walk by them, not discuss them, pretend they're not there, find other excuses, all those things, and you call yourself a Christian, a follower of Jesus, I don't think you have been paying much attention to what these scriptures say.
I'm wondering if there's a way for people to help. You mentioned you're raising money.
So yeah, there's a few ways. And we just launched a website, NFLKneeldown.com. And on there, one is a video we did, and there's other ways to get involved. One is you can join. There's a schedule of different stadiums that we'll be outside of over the season. You can come and join us at a tailgate and a kneel down. You can give to a veteran. You can in your home turn on a beginning of a game and kneel in your home during the national anthem and record that and send that to us so that we can begin to kind of build a broader community around this. And so you can do either one of those things. Give to a veteran, come join us at one of the events, kneel down at your home and send us the video. And we will also in a few weeks have some ways in which you can also support by buying a t-shirt or getting a bumper sticker or a pin or any of those kind of things, just to have something that represents and marks this time. So you can do any of those things.
I love it. So I'll have a link to NFLKneeldown.com on the show notes to the show. And I'm looking at the schedule right now. I mean, you guys are going to be in Dallas at least once, it looks like. Man, I'd love to be able to join you. I'm obviously here in Austin. It's not too far in Texas terms. But yeah, I'll put all that on the show notes. So if you can.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun Texas weekend. I'm actually going to be in San Antonio preaching at a church that morning, and then go get up to Dallas for that game that evening. So we'll be doing the Texas tour.
I would love to. Yeah, yeah. It'd be great to see some people out there at one of those protests. Man, Leroy, thanks for coming and sharing about this project.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on again. And yeah, all those who want to get involved, please do. We would love to have you.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have. And I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code Seminary Dropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at @beardonabike. That's @beardonabike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah,